for President Trump's 20-point peace plan for Gaza, and call it what you will, but as I read this and as I understand it, no recognition of a Palestinian state, the requirement that Hamas disarm and the Gaza demilitarize as a first step. And if you get to that part, then maybe we'll move on to what they'll call phase two. But for the most part, I found it interesting that the UN even approved this and that Russia and or China didn't veto it, which they could have done. They abstained. So we have a 13-0 vote, which I can't remember the last time a pro-U.S. military strategy or U.S. policy was fully embraced and not just shot down outright. Now, you can correct me on my history and my recollection, Daniel Davis, but what's your reaction to at least the UN approving this? Because normally I find them to be a completely worthless organization.
Well, just look in terms of what actually happened. There was the Trump's 20-point peace plan form the foundation of this agreement. And there is actually point number 17. There is a provision that leads to the eventual Palestinian state. So it at least aspirationally is part of the deal. An aspiration is far from a concrete action plan. So we'll see how that works out. But the first issue is the fact that this was Trump's plan and it was agreed to by all these parties. However, it's always, you know, some howevers here. You have the opposition in the Israeli cabinet led by a guy named Lieberman. You have Smotrich and some of these others definitely against it, like vehemently against it. They think that it's a betrayal of Israel, that it lays the foundation, especially because of this international stabilization force that's supposed to come in and provide peace, etc. They're like, that's going to lay the foundation for our insecurity in the future. Then you have the Hamas side, and they just categorically rejected it. They said, nope, we don't agree with this because it doesn't give enough benefits and freedoms to the and guarantees for the Palestinian people, etc. Everybody seems to like it except the Israelis and the Hamas side. So I'm not sure what to make of that. That's not entirely optimistic, but at least relatively speaking, the ceasefire is holding the casualty count in the Gaza Strip, as opposed to the West Bank, where, by the way, violence is spiking to almost all-time high levels. And let's not lose sight of that fact. But at least in the Gaza Strip, things are relatively holding. And as long as there's one more day without violence, or limited violence, then it's one more day, there's a chance that we can bring permanent peace to the situation. But we are way far from this turning into peace. This is just, as you just pointed out, this is kind of like phase one and a half, and now we have to do the hard part of phase two, and we'll see how it goes from there.
In terms of disarming, you know, getting, I understand the concept. How does one bring that about? Obviously very complicated, especially when Hamas does not want to disarm. It's the only mechanism they have to maintain or maintain any control or power. But yeah, I guess it depends on what the Palestinian people want by way of leadership, of course, the physical space, Gaza. But how, if they could achieve disarmament, would that come about given Hamas's resistance?
It's going to be incredibly difficult. And you're going to have the participation and cooperation of the Palestinian people. And listen, this is one of the areas I've several times on your show here talking about how I've been upset at the Israeli side because they have used a lot of violence against the people and they have not, you know, been straightforward with what they said and what they did, et cetera. But I'll tell you right now, the Hamas, they have to be put, lots of pressure has to be put on them. And primarily, I think, by the Arab coalition and the Arab countries in there, because the longer they drag their feet, if they actually say, well, we're not going to accept this, they have no leverage. All they can do is just be persistent and forget about trying to do anything that brings the war to an end and then bring more firepower on the people of Palestine. So they have nothing to gain except for a continuation of the war. And I really hope that both the Palestinian people and the Arabs in the area bring pressure on them to do exactly what it is. There's nothing for them to gain and everything for the Palestinian people to gain by them doing what they're supposed to. We'll see if it turns out that way, but that's the biggest impediment in the near term.
Yeah, I mean, I want to draw a parallel, say something along the lines of, well, the Abraham Accords have gotten people to sort of put down their fighting words and sort of agree to work together for a collective peace in the agreement in the region. That coalition of, I hope, ever-growing Arab countries, that's the pressure that can help bring to bear on Hamas in the area? I mean, is that kind of a working coalition that can do that?
It is, but we also bear in mind that it's especially the kingpin of this, the Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
They're willing to do that, but they also have pressure on the Israeli side, because they said, listen, we'll expand the Abraham Accords and we'll talk more peace on that, but you have to at least provide a viable path to a Palestinian statehood or freedom. And of course, Israel doesn't want to do that. They've been just categorically opposed. That's one of the things that the Israeli side is most opposed to in this UN deal, because it has the aspiration toward that. And you know, how much pressure is the U.S. going to bring on Israel to abide by their portion? How much will Saudi Arabia, who's meeting with Trump today, by the way, how much pressure will they put on the Hamas side to do what they're supposed to do? So lots of people want peace. And so the matter of how much pressure they're going to put on the two sides to bring this all together.
So who would be the ones arming Hamas on a going forward basis, given that, you know, Iran's economy seems to be collapsing? They're going to have to move the capital because of lack of water. Of course, the sanctions, international pressure. Where are they going to continue to get their hardware?
Oh, yeah. As long as there's money involved and hatred of Israel, weapons will be found. There's ways they can get smuggled in. You just can't stop everything. And people are motivated. They will find a way to get things done. So there's enough people that hate Israel around the world. And there's money and weapons are going to find their way in there one way or the other.
Point well taken. Understood. Just needed to be on the record on that. Real quick here, Emmanuel Macron planning on sending 100 fighter jets to Zelensky over the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Ukraine still demanding more Tomahawks. This is the same conversation you've been having for weeks, Daniel Davis. This ain't going to help anything, is it?
No, it isn't. I actually made that point on my show this week already, that this is an extension of the things that we're doing that don't help, because we've had it was going to be the ATACMS, the long range, then it was going to be the Storm Shadow, then it was going to be the F-16s. That's what was good. And none of them made any difference here. And now talking about just a different kind of jet, that's not the problem. That's not where Israel, that's not where the Ukraine side's problems are. In fact, it was a great piece on, I think it was last Friday, by Julian Röpke, a German a journalist who's been covering this war from the beginning. One of the best, most accurate, definitely pro-Ukraine, but he's also accurate in most of his stuff. And he had a piece where he just said, let's call this what it is. Ukraine is on a path to a strategic defeat. They will not win if they keep going. If they self-delusion both Ukraine government and their military and the Western people. And one of the things he pointed out was, you're not doing the things that actually matter on the battlefield. He said, send in like millions of drones, not these big high-tech weapon systems. That's not where the fight's won or lost on the battlefield. It's with the drone situation. And he said, Russia has a huge advantage and it's growing. And we're tinkering around with jets over 10 years. I mean, come on, man, that's humiliating and it's embarrassing. And it's just helping for Ukraine to lose.
Hey, I'm sorry I laugh over that point, but I really literally laugh when I saw that over 10 years thing, because it goes back to the reality of it's every missile system there is. There's a finite amount and a limited number of places they can go in the world, and the seemingly unlimited demand for all this hardware. Yeah, so.
And you know how long it's going to take to train these pilots up? You remember when we authorized the F-16s when Biden did? It was like somewhere around 9 months or maybe even longer before they could get their pilots trained up on the F-16. Now you've got to start a whole new one, unless something's been going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. You're talking about multiple months just to get them to get in the cockpit effectively and then operate the weapon systems there. So this is just ridiculous in my view.